Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
That's too bad. You'll regret that later. Well, Dr. Sam, thank you very much. It's always a privilege to hear from him. We enjoyed him very much when he and his family attended in Eagle Rock and then went south and left us, abandoned us. So it's good to hear him. So it's good to see all of you. Nice crowd on this beautiful Sabbath day. This is a very, very special weekend, isn't it? It's a pleasure to speak before you, to have the opportunity to address you. I would like to apologize at the outset, the church does, on behalf of all the Italians, Poles, Czechs, Spanish, Germans, and French for the first message. Now, I think John did a very, very nice job. In fact, I think we know some people who do speak Czech, and I actually thought that they could hear what he was saying. So maybe John has been given that gift. But that was very good. It's also Memorial Day weekend, where we honor our fallen dead. And so I brought, as is appropriate, a flag. How many of you served this country? If you could raise your hand. Thank you for your service to the country. And I think it's important to remember Memorial Day because God has protected and blessed us with that protection. But it's also a very, very important weekend because it's Pentecost weekend. And the way we do count Pentecost, as Mr. Segley was enumerating, is indeed a Saturday and a Sunday. It is the culmination of 7 weeks of counting. And many in the church, believe it or not, do count off those days, Sabbath 1 through 7. Because it is a complete week, Sunday to Saturday. It all began back in April during the Days of Unleavened Bread, and the morrow after the Sabbath connected within the Days of Unleavened Bread. I'd almost like to take you back there, if we could, just for a moment. So today, part of it is really not today. It's yesterday, and the culmination. And I'd like today to review with you some very basic understanding that we have, possibly with another or added perspective. And I'd also like to ensure that our younger people hear this from the standpoint that they embed in their minds why we meet 2 days in a row and why this day is so important. Mr. Segley and I did coordinate our messages so that we do complement one another. I mean, he is a fine speaker, but it wasn't that kind of compliment. We build on one another. And so my job or our job in the first section of speaking is to set things up, and those in the afternoon, they're the closers, as it were. The feast days do begin with agriculture and harvest, and if you would turn back with me to Leviticus chapter 23, where we will spend the vast majority of our time. I think in so many of the Church of God Bibles, the Bibles fall open to Leviticus chapter 23, and they're hard-creased in many ways because we refer to them so often. Let's read them together. And the Lord spoke to Moses in verse 9, and the Lord of the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give to you and reap its harvest, then you shall bring a sheaf of the firstfruits of your harvest to the priest. He shall wave the sheaf before the Eternal to be accepted on your behalf on the day after the Sabbath. The priest shall wave it. And you shall offer on that day, when you wave the sheaf, a male lamb of the first year without blemish, as a burnt offering to the Eternal. Its grain offering shall be 2/10 of an ephah, fine flour mixed with oil, an offering made by fire to the Eternal for a sweet aroma. Its drink offering shall be wine 1/4 of a hin. You shall eat neither bread, nor parched grain, nor fresh grain, until the same day that you have brought an offering to your God. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings." Now, that's a lot of somehow technical verbiage for the day that happened 7 weeks ago. Now, to the young people, let's explain. In Moses' day, it was agricultural. There was no Trader Joe's. If there was a Trader Joe's at the time of Moses, there was only one, far away in South Pasadena, on Arroyo Parkway. Many people in the church today still feel that is a holy place and make their pilgrimage there quite often. So for grain or bread or pancakes, Children, there were no Denny's there either. They had to plant crops, seed in the ground. They had to water and till and wait and pray for more water, rain, and pray again and again and again until the harvest came. It was lots of praying when you're in an agricultural culture. Lots of praying, much like a Lakers season that goes bad. So they depended a lot on God. This is how farmers work. How many of you come from farming families? You know there are no atheists in farming. There is a great dependence upon God. And so what would happen is when harvest time would come in the spring for barley, and then early summer, or now, for wheat, and in the fall, God gave them instructions. And there were instructions for different reasons. And they were to take a sample sheaf, a sheaf of the barley, not Omar Sharif, not Le Sheaf, but a handful of stalks, not bonds, but stalks of grain. Now, this is as close as I could get. Don't laugh. Took me a lot to get this, and I got to get it back in my neighbor's yard before he notices. Now it's out of my yard. And so they took a sheaf, and they would wave it. And so they would wave it from the barley, and this was an offering. It was very, very important. Alfred Edersheim, in his book, The Temple and Its Service, has something to say about this relative to when this event occurred. But in order to clearly bring out all that was distinctive in this ceremony, the high priest first asked bystanders three times each of these questions. This is after the Sabbath day, the seventh day Sabbath. He says, has the sun gone down with this sickle into this basket that would cut the grain and allow it to fall into the basket? Three times. Having each time been answered in the affirmative, they cut down barley to the amount of one ephah, or 10 omers, or 3 seahs, which is equal to about 3 pecks and 3 pints of our English measure. The ears were brought into the court of the temple, thrashed out with canes or stalks, so that not to injure the grain, then parched on a pan perforated with holes, so that each grain might be touched by fire, and finally exposed to the wind. Thus prepared, it was ground into a barley mill, which was left the hulls whole. So there was some ritual to it, but it was that important. And I do not seek to make light of it in any way, shape, or form. But many times, especially for our younger people, a lot of this does not make a whole lot of sense. But it is very, very important. And we need to place ourselves often into a culture when we read from a book. We do that with fiction, don't we? They try and put us back into the 18th century, or 16th century, or 15th century, of whenever it was written. The author does that. The Bible is no different. We need to have an agricultural mind when we read these verses. It was their life and death if they did not get rain. So they were very dependent upon God. So they'd go to the standing barley, cut the wave sheaf. Now this was a sample of first fruits. It says very clearly. It says in somewhere here, there it is, verse 10. My eyes are getting bad. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give you, reap its harvest, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits. So there are first fruits given at this time. It is a sampling, an offering. It was first, foremost, important, preeminent. This first fruits was. This was an offering that they made by instruction from God. And many other cultures did the same thing. They would cut off a representative off a tree or a harvest of a field, even animals. The firstborn, the new lambs, it was very, very important. Notice indeed that there is mention of a young lamb here in these verses. But it means more, much, much more. But first, you will notice in these verses, this is no holy day. There is no cessation of work mentioned here. This is not a Sabbath of rest. It's merely a day. In Numbers 28:26, you can refer to it, or I'll refer to it, you need not turn there. The day is called Yom HaBakarim, meaning the day of first fruits. It is a day, but it has a specific name. It is the day of first fruits, or the day of the first fruit. And I want you to remember that. So I want you to, for a moment, picture yesterday. Picture last Sabbath, 24 hours ago. It is the 49th day. It is the seventh Sabbath. We have just spoken of the days up until yesterday, and they've been counted down laboriously to 50. Now we keep reading. Because there is no break in the scroll, as they would read in the temple, it was a continuous line of not even verse numbers. It was a continuous line of Hebrew letters, of the sentences one after another. The verses are man-made. So it is continuous. He says, it shall be a statute forever throughout your generations and all your dwellings, and you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath. Those of us that have been in the church for 30 or 40 or more years know the phrase Mimo Harat, the day, or Yom Mimo Harat, meaning the day after the Sabbath. We see these verses in 15, the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the first wave offering, seven Sabbaths shall be completed. Count 50 days to the day after the seventh Sabbath. Then you shall offer a new grain offering to the Eternal. You shall bring from your dwellings two wave loaves of two tenths of an ephah. They shall be a fine flour. They shall be baked with leaven. They are the first fruits to the Eternal. And you shall offer with the bread seven lambs of the first year without blemish, one young bull, two rams. They shall be as a burnt offering to the Eternal with their grain offerings, their drink offerings, an offering made by fire for a sweet aroma to the Eternal. Then you shall sacrifice one kid of the goats as a sin offering and two male lambs of the first year. The priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits as a wave offering before the Eternal with the two lambs. They shall be holy to the Eternal for the priest. And they shall proclaim on the same day that it is a holy convocation to you. You shall do no customary work on it. It shall be a statute forever in all your dwellings throughout your generations. You can see the repetition. There are some differences, to be sure. There's another wave. There's another sheaf. Now, don't laugh. All right? But then these are turned into... Please don't laugh. It was the best I could do. And by the way, this bag is from Trader Joe's. Well, is that me? They are both from Trader Joe's, so that makes them double holy. And so these sheaves are turned into loaves of bread baked with leaven. And it's important to understand these other sets of verses. They are highly connected to the first, but they're very different. So there are two harvests. There is a barley harvest and there is a wheat harvest. And they're very, very different. They're different grains. We make them out of we make breads out of them as different types of bread. Sometimes they're mixed, but they are different. 50 days, seven Sabbaths are complete from Sunday to Saturday seven times. And on the 50th day, on a Sunday, today, we celebrate a holy convocation. This is an important concept. Indeed, as Mr. Segley said, the word Pentecoste in the Greek means 50th. The Jews know it as Shavuot, which means weeks. It is the festival of weeks. And it's important to understand it is 50 days also for them of semi-mourning. They have added, as they are wont to do, many different things. No weddings are allowed during these 50 days, none whatsoever. It's also connected to the counting of the Omer. So this is a very important set of days, these 50 days. They begin in the days of unleavened bread. They end today. Traditionally, in Jewish circles, the day is also of the commemoration of the giving of the law at Sinai. And if you wanted a really interesting study, go to the book of Exodus and count the days from the journey from Egypt to the day at Sinai in Exodus chapter 20. Now, there's a couple of days that we can't account for, but it comes unbelievably close to 50 days. So not only is this the day of weeks, this is also traditionally the giving of the law at Sinai, hence the blowing of the trumpet. The counting is for some an issue, and I'm not going to go into great detail. That's a time for another subject. But we interpret it as the Bethusians, the Sadducees, and the Karaites did, and the Karaites do today. It's from Sabbath The Sabbath is not a high day from the counting. It is Sunday. It is a Sunday, Saturday, that they start the counting and ending on a Sunday. Seven complete whole Sabbaths. I'll refer you, by the way, to a parallel in the counting of the Jubilee in Leviticus chapter 25, which is another study. Seven complete, utterly complete, Sunday to Saturday. You can't get more complete than that in a Sabbath cycle. But I want you to note the loaves. They are not just loose grain parched over a fire, as the first wave was. These are put together in a cake, a bread, something to be possibly eaten. Bread is meant to be eaten. But this is done with leaven, just as these two loaves of bread here in front of me. And so when we look at this leaven, it's very different. Leaven is not used much at all in the offerings. You see it very, very rarely, because leaven indeed was a type of sin. But these are also fruits of the first offering. These also are considered first fruits, which this day commemorates. And it was an offering to God. Think of it this way. The parched first fruits of the first offering, the first wave sheaf offering, could not be made with leaven. Why? Because it was during the days of unleavened bread. When we get to the second wave sheaf offering, these can be made with leaven. And there are many interesting reasons. Because they are different. They are the same in many ways as the first. They are different in many ways from the first. But they are connected literarily, biblically. They are almost as if a seamless connection, these two wave sheafs are. These two sets of first fruits. It's almost like there's a first fruit, then there's a second first fruit. Because they're different, yet they're the same. Both times speak of a day of first fruits. Both have offerings to some degree. It begins after a Sabbath. 50 days later, it ends on a high day today. And they are connected. Israel has kept these days for centuries. Judah, the Jews, have kept these for many, many centuries. They observe them in many ways the way they did then. And though they have added to them from time to time, the days are pretty much the same. There is no temple, and they have accounted for that. But as they move from a less agricultural to a more city-oriented society, things change. We all lose contact. And so it's important to remember this context of the field, of harvest. It was important. And God uses these ideas, these concepts of harvest, symbolically, type and antitype. Prototype and a type. He uses these for very distinct reasons. Right about now, the kids or the young people are saying, so what? This is farming. I'm not a farmer. Big deal. I say thank you to God when I eat. But why the harvest? Why all this talk of wave sheafs and first fruits and agriculture? Because it pictures something more. This idea of first fruits is very special to God, supremely special. Instead of saying first fruits, we could say firstborn. Firstborn is important. Those of you that are firstborn have special responsibilities in your families. How many of you are firstborn? Raise your hand. Wow, quite a few of you. I am. How many of you are secondborn? Ooh. Thirdborn? Eighth? Four hands went up. 12th? We're glad you left the Mormon church and joined us. How many of you are twins? Oh, a few of you. How many of you had evil twins? How many of you were the evil twin? Better yet, how many of you wanted to be? No, we're kidding. Kinda. Those of you who are firstborn have special responsibilities. I call firstborns guinea pigs. All the firstborns know what I'm talking about. Many times firstborns think they are better. But the stories of the firstborns, I'll show you why I maintain they are guinea pigs, this firstborn, first fruit issue. With parents experiment with firstborn. They just do. They usually say, woo, on the first kid. Well, that didn't work. We won't do that again. We'll do better next time because we can't do much worse. Firstborn. I can recall with my parents when I was firstborn, I was the one that drank the paint thinner. They said, maybe we shouldn't put paint thinner in a soup can. I was the one who stepped on nails on boards in the woodpile. Maybe we need to not leave those kinds of things around when the little boy is there. I'm the one who walked out the back door before the porch was built. Maybe we better lock that door until the porch is built. You get the point. Firstborn are usually the family members who limp a lot. We were the guinea pigs because much is expected. Much is expected. To whom much is given, much is expected. You were in your family required to set the example, weren't you? You were required to set the standard, weren't you? You were the one that all the other brothers and sisters looked up to, weren't you? There is a reason. It's called primogeniture. It is an incredibly important concept in the Bible. It means that which is first. Does not always mean that's which is best, but it means it is the standard. When we think of the first fruits of God, when it says in both places, I've got to get this bread out of the way, sorry. When it says in both sections of these verses, he says, you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits to your harvest, verse 10. And then it says again in verse 17, they shall be of fine flour. They are the first fruits of the eternal. They're two different first fruits. One's first, one is second. When we think of the first fruits of God, or stated better, firstborn of God, who do we think of? When we think of God's first and only born Son, we think of one individual and one individual only. There can be no other, and that is Jesus Christ. When we think of he who was first born of a woman, then died and was the firstborn to rise to God in the resurrection, whom do we think of? There is only one, and that's Jesus Christ. When we read the feasts of God in Leviticus, we enter the world of the disciples. We enter the world of yesterday, literally yesterday, 2,000 years ago. We enter their world. We, in this room, predominantly do not need to turn to the New Testament to understand these verses, do we? They didn't. There was no New Testament. They wrote it. So for us, when I say the first fruits, the feast of the first fruits, in chapters 9 through 14, you think of whom? You think of Jesus Christ. He is the wave sheaf offering. He is the one that has ascended to heaven by the strength of the Father. Turn with me, if you would, to Colossians chapter 1. We will turn to the New Testament anyway. In Colossians 1 and beginning in verse 13, he has delivered, speaking of God, he has delivered us from the power of darkness and conveyed us into the kingdom of the Son of his love, in whom we have redemption through his blood and forgiveness of sin. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, for by him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things consist. And he, speaking of Jesus Christ, is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he may have preeminence. This word is repeated twice in these verses. It is the word protokos in the Greek, which means first issue, firstborn. It's this idea of primogeniture, firstborn. He is the epitome, that he may have the preeminence. So he is therefore preeminent. Revelation chapter 1, 5 says that he is the firstborn from the dead. There are no others. He is the firstborn. It knocks in the head the concept that when we die, men go to heaven. There is only one who has died and been resurrected and stands at the right hand of God the Father on his throne, and that is Jesus Christ. He is the first wave. He was and is the first wave, the sheaf of barley that we read about in verses 9 through 15. Christ died and resurrected to the Father. Christ died and was resurrected to the Father, all in a span of 3 or 4 days. For 3 days and 3 nights, he was in the tomb. He was resurrected late on the Sabbath. And just at the same time, I want you to picture with me, Christ has died, laid in the tomb, and is released. The next day, Mary sees him. What does he say to Mary? You remember the scripture. I need not turn to it for you. He said, "Do not touch me. Or do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father." He is that wave sheaf that goes to the Father. It pictures the miraculous resurrection of Christ of salvation. Do we honor, do we acknowledge the resurrection of Jesus Christ? Yes, we do. For 50 days we do. For 50 days we do. It's called the Feast of the Firstborn, the Day of the Firstborn and the Feast of Weeks. As the priests were making the wave sheaf offering in the temple on that Sunday, the day after the Sabbath, Christ rose to God to be accepted by God as the sacrifice of as this wave sheaf. But what of the second wave sheaf, these two loaves? These two loaves are made with leavened bread. But there are verses also that make us think of these. Turn with me, if you would, to Romans chapter 8. In this very, very famous set of verses that I often hear non-Church of God or Protestant churches quote. Let's start in verse 28. And we know, Romans 8, 28, "And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to his purpose, for whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of" whom? "Of his Son, Jesus Christ, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren." He is the firstborn. He is the firstfruits. He is the preeminent one. But he is the first to be born among many brethren, which gives us a hint that there are to be more, which explains the second wave sheaf, explains the second example of the two loaves. I don't know if we've ever made a direct analogy that we are like a loaf of bread. Two loaves, one loaf integral. That's a whole other subject. It has great pictures. It pictures great things. Hebrews chapter 12, if you'll turn there with me. Hebrews chapter 12 has some very, very interesting concepts. In Hebrews chapter 12, and beginning and picking up the story in verse 18, he says, in comparing the two mountains, he says, "For you have not come to the mountain that may be touched and that burned with fire and to blackness and darkness and tempest and to the sound of a trumpet and the voice of words, so that those who heard it begged that the words should not be spoken to them anymore. For they could not endure it, what was commanded. And if so much as a beast touches the mountain, it shall be stoned or shot with an arrow. And so terrifying was the sight that Moses said, 'I am exceedingly afraid and trembling.'" What was this day? This was the day of the giving of the law at Sinai, wasn't it? Exodus chapter 20. He goes on, verse 22. "But you have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn, who are registered in heaven, to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of just men made perfect, Jesus the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaks better things than that of Abel." There's a lot there, tremendous amount there. It gives the setting of today. The cultural understanding of the Jews and the giving of this law at Sinai predates our era. It was at the time of Jesus, the giving of the law. Paul, or the writer of Hebrews, places that this day with that day. So it gives just more, a little bit more than tradition. But he says, you have come to Mount Zion, to the innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly in the church, or those that are called out, of the firstborn, who are registered in heaven. Those who are called of God are registered. It's like a driver's license. I got my driver's license recently. What an ordeal. Oh, we won't go. How much time have we got? It'll take an hour. Forget it. We're all registered. If you open up your wallets and purses, you'll see a number of cards. Some of them have your picture on there. Mine does. My driver's license has my picture on there. I'm registered. Shows my Disney pass. I'm registered, right? Right? Somehow my driver's license won't get me to Disneyland, and my Disneyland pass the police don't want to see. But I'm registered twice. Registered here is far, far more important because it connects us with the first wave sheaf of Jesus Christ, the second wave. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, if you'll turn there with me, this concept of firstborn and first fruits is so important, so pervasive. If you were to do a word search, I'll give you a real good website, no endorsement of it, but biblos.com. How many of you have ever heard of it? Oh, quite a few of you. Good. It's very, very good. Just type in the word firstborn or firstfruits. There's many, many more Old Testament references to the concept of firstfruits because it is such a prevalent and consistent and constant concept within the Bible. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, beginning in verse 20, Paul says, "But now Christ is risen from the dead and has become the firstfruits of those who have fallen asleep." Now, what is he talking about? Christ is the firstfruits. That's the first wave sheaf, right? Leviticus chapter 9, 23, verse 9. "Christ is risen from the dead and has become the firstfruits of those who have fallen asleep. For since by man came death, man also came the resurrection of the dead. For as in Adam all die, so even in Christ, shall all be made alive." He's now shifted. He is now shifted from the first wave sheaf, and he's moving forward. Paul is. He's literally moving from the concepts that we read in Leviticus chapter 9 of the first wave sheaf, and now he is moving to the second wave. He says, "For as in Adam all die, even so in Christ all shall be made alive. But each one in his own order, Christ the first fruits, afterward those who were Christ at his coming, then comes the end." In two or three verses, he sums up this idea of these two wave sheaves. They are inexorably connected, inexorably intertwined, inexorably bound together. We are bound together, as Paul says here in 1 Corinthians 15, in Christ, in the Messiah, which harkens all the way back to those horrible and obsolete and unnecessary holy days. What a poor example God has given us. So says those that don't keep holy days, those that don't honor, those that don't recall, those that don't remember, those that see no difference in the holy days, do they? I submit to them they should lose some weight. Take their Bible and just rip off 2/3 of it if they feel that it is so inconsequential that the Old Testament is not for any good example. But I think they know down deep inside because they keep carrying it around with them. These days are incredibly important. It paints a complete and utter picture. Paul uses in this chapter, in these verses, the word firstfruits is a very different word. It's not protokos anymore. It's not firstborn. It literally means the word, the first of sacrifices. The first of fruit. The firstfruits, which meant a sacrifice. Christ was offered as a sacrifice for the atonement of sin, and because of that was resurrected to the right hand of the Father. These second loaves made with leaven. You know what you have to do? I've watched my wife for a number of years when she cooks. She's a very, very good cook. too good a cook in some ways, right? You eat too much. But I've watched her when she cooks. They start out in one form, and when they cook, they lose moisture. They can lose, and some of the ingredients burn off. You know, the leaven that you put in food, right, the active leaven, it's technically cooked out. It's burned out. Its results are left. That's why it rises. It's a chemical reaction. But a lot of what's in bread, dough, is evaporated. It's different after it's been cooked, after it's been put through fire, after it's been, shall we say, tested. So these loaves have been put through the fire. But we know who these loaves are. I'm looking at them. The second wave, or the second sheaf, is you. The second wave, or the second loaf, is second only to Christ. They're still first fruits. They are still a part of the resurrection of this harvest, this second harvest, that all the prophecies of the Old and New Testament prophesy to. At the end of days, there will be a general resurrection, both the living and the dead. And many of us will see our loved ones who are now dead alive again. This is an important day. It does not speak so much to the resurrection, but it talks about those second loaves as a part of first fruits. It connects us, this day does, 50 days ago, 7 weeks to the days of unleavened bread. Jesus said, if I do not go away after his resurrection, if I do not go away, what can't happen? The Spirit cannot come. The promise, wait for the promise from the Father on high. Tarry here. We have to wait. And that's what we do now. You loaves of bread, you wait now. This day is a culmination. It's a long-awaited day. It connects us with the days of living bread and the life, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ on into this feast of Pentecost, which I'm sure you will hear much more about in detail in the afternoon. So let's leave some reminders to ourselves. Number one, this festival today is in many ways about our calling, that we are a part of this second wave of first fruits. Indeed, we are a part of this harvest. We can partake of this blessing and should recognize it as important as can be this high day, this holy day. As firstborn, not physically, because it does not matter whether you are firstborn, secondborn, thirdborn, if you are a twin, evil twin, third twin, triplets, quadruplets, it doesn't matter. Physically, it does. Spiritually, it doesn't mean a thing. Spiritually, we are all the firstborn of the second wave of these first fruits. And we have responsibilities to God. The first fruits of God must act as the first fruits of God. In our conduct, in our speech, we are the first fruits of God. And we therefore have responsibilities spiritually. We are not perfect. This day reminds us there's leaven in those loaves. It's been burned out, hopefully, but it started out with leaven. And that is the cooking process, the testing process. Maybe we should forgive more often, pray more often, and recall more often from the rock in which we were hewn. And so, brethren, you are the first fruits of the second harvest that this day pictures. Have a wonderful Pentecost and the Sabbaths that go on after this day.